Living Faith with Father Richard Umbers.
Look to the Old Testament. You see the example given to us of King David, a very generous man. On one occasion, in battle, fighting the enemy, they were in a place where there was little water. And two of his soldiers, emboldened, went to the enemy camp and drew water and brought it back to King David so that he could have a drink. A great risk to themselves. And seeing that generosity, King David pours the water out on the ground as a libation to God. Which of us would have done that? King David was a generous man. And he had courage, staring down Goliath. He had patience in putting up with King Saul. He had loyalty in not touching, you know, God's anointed one. He had occasions to kill King Saul, even though Saul was seeking his life. So many different ways in which King David is a man to be admired, and he also is a type for you, Jesus. But he had his flaws. He had his weak points. He didn't look after himself. He didn't realize that you need to struggle always. A problem that his son would also encounter. Because it was the time for war. It was the season for making war. And King David stayed at home. Now, it's not as though he was trying to be a pacifist or something like that. It was simply that giving way to that thought of, I've already done my dash. I've already done a lot. I deserve a break. And instead of leading the others into battle, instead of, you know, giving that example, he said, look, I'll sleep in. I'll stay at home today. And so it was. You know, he had a little bit of a nap in the middle of the day. What's wrong with a little nap? Oh, you know, I've had a late night, whatever it might have been the reason. I'll have a break today. I won't go to work. I won't carry out my responsibilities for the day. I've done so much, God ought to be happy with me. I've done my duty. Maybe we begin to respond in the same way. It's a little bit like that older brother of the prodigal son, you know, who was counting how much he had received for what he had done. And King David has that nap. Well, in itself, I mean, to have a nap in the middle of the day is not a big deal. I mean, sometimes, you know, you may need, out of prudence, to do something like that. But in general, especially if you're, you know, you're a healthy young guy, a siesta is probably not what you need. But he has his little, a nice lunch, it's a hot day, have a little snooze. Little snooze. Slack. Really, really slack. As if, you know, well, now is the hour when professional people have to go back to work. But I'm a student. And then what happens? Well, you know, okay, leisurely gets back into the working day after his little snooze, and well, I'll go for it. It's a hot day. I'm up on top of the building. I'm in the tallest building. I'll go for a little walk, a little stroll. You know, no sense in hitting the books straight away. I suppose for ourselves, it could be something like, oh, a bit of a surf on the net before I, you know, get back to my books, something like that, just to check out what's going on. I don't know, the names of these sites, 4chan or 9gag or whichever way it goes. And, what's the latest that's been posted? And in this case, you know, he's walking around, and because he's at the tallest building, he looks around, and oh, look, I can see the other buildings around me, and oh, I can see what people are doing on the top of those other buildings. And oh, look, there's a woman having a bath. And oh, she's not a bad-looking woman. And oh, she's not a bad-looking woman at all. And for ourselves, you know, all sorts of things. We start to get bored with work, bored with what we're supposed to be doing, and we just become aimless. And it could be something innocent enough. It could be Facebook. Well, I'll just check out, you know, Facebook, what the party, what happened at the party, what happened at the other party, what other people were saying. All sorts of things. And then, you know, or it could be with those news sites, quite often, you know, with Yahoo News or something like that. And generally, it's some sort of Hollywood gossip. And so-and-so broke up with so-and-so? No. So-and-so is now having a three-headed baby with so-and-so? Really? Come on. Most of that stuff's made up anyway. It's just a much truth value to the whole thing. But you know, but we want to be in on the goss. What were they wearing? What were they doing? How were they doing it? And it takes away from our presence of God. It desensitizes us to you, Lord. If we wish to be contemplatives in the middle of the world, if we really want to love you, Lord, seriously, we cannot be entertaining in our hearts such frivolous nonsense. And it has a terrible impact on us. And then, you know, not just, you know, looking at things, you know, just randomly looking at things on the computer, YouTube, most viewed. Well, okay, some of the most viewed may be whatever it is. You know, it could be some funny prank. But sometimes some of the most viewed is really, you know, a Christian should not watch that. And sometimes there are things like Tumblr or whatever, you know, it's a real danger zone, because even when you're not looking for things, things come. They just pop up. And the problem is, if you're bored and you're just surfing and you're just doing whatever, the temptation to click on these things, and there's no one else around, and you've got the computer in your own room and no one can see, and we have a fallen nature, and things are just a click away. Or, especially as you get older, with these things, you can start to, you know, fall into the situation of thinking, what happened to that person I used to know at school? That boy, if it's the case of a girl looking through Facebook, or, you know, if it's the case of yourselves looking through Facebook, that girl I used to know. I just want to know, I'm just interested, just, you know, what happened to her? What happened to that person? I just wonder, you know, and I, at that time, instead of check them out, and, oh, look at that, look at the photos, and I'll just send a little message. Hi, how are you going? You know. Just send a little message. And it's amazing what can happen. You know, how many divorces are due to Facebook? Fairly high percentage. That's why it's wise, I think, sometimes for spouses to have, you know, sometimes they have a joint account with Facebook or something, or, you know, they're using the same thing. They're on the same page, literally. that was terrible. Anyhow, no, but that was a... Not necessarily, but they've got access to each other. So they know what's going on. They know what's going on. And it's so important. But, you know, King David just lets himself go. And there is a definite slippery slope from being slack to not guarding his eyes to focusing on somebody to having the power to say, come and see me sometime, like now, and then getting the woman pregnant, and then, you know, arranging for her husband to be killed in the thick of the battle. What started with slackness ended up with homicide. I'm not saying that every time you go, you know, sort of lose yourself on Facebook, that's going to end up sort of a shooting spree. But you know, to live holy purity, to live the virtue of keeping our heart, Lord, for you, means that we need to take actions, serious actions, definite, concrete steps to safeguard this beautiful treasure. Shakespeare in All's Well That Ends Well says, "Our rash faults make trivial price of serious things, not knowing them until we know their grave." You know, we treat things which are serious in a very frivolous way, and then we only realise what we've lost after they're gone. And we talked earlier about Esau selling his birthright for a bowl of lentils. And we, for the sake of a silly, silly consolation or pleasure, could lose grace, could even throw away a divinely given vocation. But we have to see holy purity as a very positive virtue, because we're talking about the indwelling of the Blessed Trinity in our soul. Grace, to be in the state of grace. Of course, there's tremendous joy living the virtue of holy purity because we have God in our soul. The divine life, which communicates a real strength, and you see that in someone's face, you see that in someone's smile, you see that in someone's eyes. The joy of life. Old people who have been 100% dedicated to you, Lord, which many times means people who have lived the charism of apostolic celibacy faithfully, but also too, you know, for married couples who have really understood what love is about, there is a joy, a glint in their eyes. There is the secret of youth. And because they're very apostolic, they're very self-giving, they're generous. The problem with not living holy purity is this, the selfishness that lust supposes. It's all about me, me, me. Take, take, take. And then people end up sad and jaded. And the problem, they think, well, it's all very well, but it's just not impossible. You know, how can you live chastity in this, today's world and everything? You can. If you know, people go to the gym to build up muscles. We need to go. We have the opportunity to do many exercises each day with our eyes. Because they're drawn one way, we pull them to another. Left, right, left, right. You know, okay, well, you know, the people doing, you know, flexing, that kind of stuff, you know, pushing weights, and, you know, okay, 10 push-ups now 20. And, well, maybe we have to do the same thing with our eyes. Okay, they're drawn there. Well, we divert them. Look up. Look at the scenery above, not straight ahead of you, or below. But it is possible, you know, to live custody of the eyes. It's such a wonderful, wonderful way of safeguarding our purity. Sure, you know, it is true that in today's world, everything is sexualized, eroticized, and people dress in that way to get attention, although they never gain people's esteem. They get their attention, but not their respect. But we should dress in such a way that you know, also too, we too can be vain, very vain, very vain. And we need to dress ourselves in a way in which people can see us. They can see all who we are with our personality, not that they focus on this or that, which is so superficial. And you know yourself, you know, in another person. Sure, you can go, wow, you know, that person looks good. But if you were to close your eyes and just, you know, sit down next to that person and listen to them talk, you know, would you really be that happy to be next to them? And when you're thinking marriage, well, that's what you're dealing with. Our hearts are made to love. They're made to love. And they need to be, therefore, in your things, Lord. They need to be in the good of souls, in apostolate, in prayer, and in piety. Because if they're not, they'll be in our own ego and in the next person that smiles at us out of vain motives. Oh, someone took an interest in me. Oh, and that'll be the end of it. And Lord, you say, if your right eye causes you to sin, if your right eye is a scandal to you, pluck it out, throw it away from you. Better to enter into heaven with one eye than to have both and go into hell. And that means that we have to take definite steps if we have problems with our sight. We have to take issue with that. And if it means that you've got a problem with the computer, doesn't mean, not everyone has a problem with the computer. It'd be fine, because they're very involved apostolically, they're praying. But for most people, it can constitute a proximate occasion of sin, especially if you've got it 24/7 in your bedroom, via the phone, via the laptop, via whatever. And it means you have to leave it outside of your room. Put it in your office, put it in a public place, keep your phone somewhere else. If it's an occasion for you to fall, then cut it out. Throw it away. It's like the story they tell of the farmer who was given a TV as a gift. And the next week, they saw it in the pigsty. They said, "What have you done? It was a perfectly good TV." He said, "Well, look, if it's not good for me, it's only fit for the pigs." That's where he put his TV, for the piggies. For ourselves too, we know that, input, output. If you gawk, you'll squawk. It's as simple as that. And then good, noble things will become like ash in your mouth. Like those pirates of the Caribbean have been cursed. They try and drink nice things and just go straight through them. And so it is, love, true love, where people actually care for each other and sacrifice for each other and can trust each other, becomes so much more difficult when it's simply a relationship of convenience and use and selfishness. But Lord, you help us, you rescue us. You give us the reason why we should struggle, why we should be upright, why we should live a chaste life, why we can be angels, although no one's an angel, but live almost like angels in the middle of the world. And there are many who so do, even today. Because they're in love. And for those of us who live apostolic celibacy, Lord, we're in love with you. We pray, and that's why we need to give paramount importance to our interior life, to our norms of piety, to our prayer. We would to let that go, we would end up in a horrible, horrible place. Because if you half a man, well, of course, you've got to be interested in what's around you. It doesn't go away. For supernatural reasons, one sacrifices a very normal thing in order to say yes to you, Lord. And it's beautiful, even though it supposes a struggle. But the same is also to be said for a married man. Because although he loves his wife dearly, it doesn't mean that the other women walking around aren't less attractive to look at. And he has to have eyes only for one woman. And chastity is an ordered love. Chastity is about integrating all those different affective impulses that we have into a mature personality, and it presupposes training. It presupposes an apprenticeship, self-mastery, which comes with being tough on ourselves, not sleeping in, not being soft, not taking little naps. Look, sometimes you're exhausted, and okay, that's a different story, and it's been an exhaustion not because you've been playing computer games for 20 hours and are in danger of deep vein thrombosis, and that's the only reason why you've stopped. Because, maybe out of charity or something like that, you've been working all night and all the rest, and okay, well, even you, Lord, would take naps. But you were so exhausted, Lord, it would be, when there was a storm raging, you'd have your head on a wooden board, and you'd be falling asleep there. I mean, that's the reason why. But, really, to be pushing, to be tough, to say no, to make mortifications in our meals, not to be intemperate, because overeating and overdrinking are sure forerunners for impurity. I can't say no to myself. We have to say no so that we can say yes, and we can say yes. It is possible with your grace, Lord. It is definitely possible, entirely possible, but we need to use the means. Who wants the end uses the means. I know guys who want to be in the Wallabies. Maybe they'll get there. There's always a bit of luck involved with that, but they're on their way. And they use the means. They go to training at 6 a.m. because it's a time when you're not going to have anything else on.
Guys will get up to go to rugby training at 6 a.m. They drink banana protein shakes, even though they don't like them. They work out at the gym. They go religiously to the gym. They do what it takes. What do we do to safeguard our purity? St. Francis of Assisi would roll in the snow. Other saints would jump into thorn bushes. I don't know what it'd be like to jump into a thorn bush. But what do we do? What are we prepared to do to safeguard our purity? Maybe a cold shower in the morning from time to time. A cold shower? Well, yeah, a cold shower. You know, I'll have a heart attack. Start now. It's not so cold, and then you'll be, you know, you'll get into it. People go swimming all year round. I know. I heard there was a place that was very, very cold in the middle of Spain. I think like in Australia, you think Australia's a hot country, but when you go to the interior, it can be very cold. You know, and here in Bargo, for instance, too. Sometimes we're up in the highlands, and it can be very, very cold. You have a cold shower here in winter, and there's shards of ice sort of, you know, coming out of the spout, you know, boom, 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 hitting you. But people can, you know, sometimes perhaps the worst thing would be not taking the cold shower, but, you know, waiting your turn and hearing the other person in there. And one young fellow who was here is very pumped up, and, you know, he talked to another young fellow and said, "Oh, we're going to have a cold shower, come on," you know, because there's various, you know, the showers here, they're more or less, even though they're all separate, you know, separately contained, but, you know, you can have two going and two different showers at a time. And he said, "Come on, when we have a shower, we'll have a cold shower. We'll offer it for the Pope. And the other guy was, "Are you sure about this?" Yeah, offer it for the Pope. And so, okay, I'll do it. People do anything, you know. Eat a potato if someone asks you to eat a potato. Try and eat a chili if they ask you to eat a chili. So, like, okay, we'll have a cold shower. And so they could hear each other. Okay, one, two, three, go. You know, cold shower. Oh, and then, "Viva Papa!" That's all good. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. I make it out to be terrible. It's not that bad. But, you know, little things like that make a difference. You know, do I have that toughness? Am I able to say no to myself so that I can say yes to you, Lord, so that I can conquer myself? It's not a question of being somehow weird and sort of, you know, every time a girl comes anywhere near, oh, no, you know, never look. And being like Silas from the Da Vinci Code, you know, majorly whacked out. It's not that. It's about safeguarding one's love. It's about, you know, not opening doors of one's heart. And you can be very refined and you can be very chivalrous and very polite and take an interest, but at the same time, you can have a certain distance in your heart. Having those bolts on your heart, not to share confidences that you shouldn't share, or with people with whom you shouldn't open up those doors. And that happens in the workplace. That's why the boss runs away with the secretary. It sounds like a joke, but it happens all the time. It's why people are unfaithful, because when they're going through a rough patch, and there will always be a rough patch, and they share things with people they shouldn't share, they're looking for a little consolation for their heart. The heart is a real traitor. We need to share those confidences, Lord, with you. All of us need emotional input. And that's why we need friends of our own age, of the same sex, with whom we can share things, with whom we get that emotional support. Very, very important. Otherwise, crazy things can happen. The heart can be crazy. We need to have a Eucharistic soul. We need, above all, Lord, to be true friends with you, to share our life with you. And when things happen, and they will happen, and when things occur to us, and they will occur to us, we speak about it in spiritual direction. Not in vague terms, in specifics, savagely sincere, which, of course, as St. Jose Maria would say, doesn't mean being sincerely savage. There's a way of putting things. But still, you know, to speak frankly, and not to be surprised. And if 2 weeks go by and there's nothing happened, which we find embarrassing, either we are Superman or we don't know ourselves. There's always going to be something a little bit embarrassing that we have to talk about in spiritual direction. Or in confession, if need be. And it's good to talk, and to talk early, and to talk before things happen. During the Civil War, people's nerves were on edge. This is the Civil War in Spain in the 1930s. You know, it's hard for us to imagine what it would be like, you know, to live in a situation of civil war. There are many countries where that is, in fact, a reality. But, you know, it's all very well romantic when you look at it historically, but you know, if you're living in that, it would freak you out. And imagine if people are after you and they're going to shoot you if they see you. You imagine that, how scared you'd be. And that was the situation San Jose Maria found himself in. He was on the run because being a priest in those times, that was sufficient to get you shot. And someone gave him a key to a safe house and said, you can spend the night here. You'll be all right. And make you move the next day. And San Jose Maria had the presence of mind of asking, is there anyone else there? And he said, no one. Look, there's just a serving girl. How old is she? I don't know, 22, 24, something like that. And he took that key and he threw it down the drain. There and then, I said, don't you realize? With the war, my nerves and everything, you know, anything could happen. Anything could happen. You know, better look, get rid of the temptation straight away. To have the courage of the saints, the courage to flee, the courage to be a coward. And that means not responding at times to an email, not responding to a Facebook message. Not going to explain ourselves, look, it's not you, it's me, no. The courage to be a coward, to flee the occasion. I'll look bad, it'll be silly, it'll be a bit, doesn't matter. Better that than to end up in all sorts of bother. And humility, above all, humility. Humility. Humility to struggle. To struggle once again. That's what really is required from each one of us, is to be humble. How often, you know, there is that pride of presumption, I'm doing well. All is good. You know, I've been 30 minutes without, you know, falling into sin. I've been 30 minutes. I'm doing really well. Now I can go look at the computer and just do whatever. And then, fall. Oh dear. And then despair. The pride of despair. I'll never get anywhere. It's all too much. No. With humility to say, Lord, okay, you know, I've had this setback. My thoughts have strayed. I've given in to desires which I shouldn't have had or something like that. Well, okay, Lord, I'm sorry. I am truly sorry. With all my heart, I am sorry. And with your help, I will not sin again. If need be, to confession. And then as if nothing had happened. Running on again. Of course we need to do penance, we need to make up for things, for sure. But not to be bogged down. Not to let ourselves be held back by the remembrance of past faults. And sometimes what the devil will do is you know, making it complicated and say, well, was that a fall? Was it not a fall? And everything. And then you go back over and over again over the thing. And then you end up actually falling interiorly because he made you go in circles around it. No, forget about it. Pray. Be simple. Little children are continually falling over and getting back up again. And they're happy almost to be doing that. And we have to be little children to enter into the kingdom of heaven. To be strong and to be humble. To be sincere. The Muslims praise the purity of Mary and recommend her as a model to all women. It's amazing. In the Quran, in fact, there's an apocryphal story there where when Jesus is born, he even speaks out in defense of his mother's purity. It's pretty amazing. That's in the Quran. Mother of fair love, we need a tremendous devotion to Mary for many reasons, but also too because she is the mother of fair love, true love, of holy purity. And she helps us when we feel ashamed, and she helps us to struggle when we feel, in inverted commas, that it's too late. I've already given in. It's too bad now. I've really let myself go. No, it's never, ever too late. And with Our Lady, we can turn, Lord, to You. We go through Our Lady to You, Jesus, and we can return also to You, Jesus, through Our Lady.
That was Living Faith with Father Richard Umbers. For more, go to cradio.org.au.